Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parent in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you are listening to Parent in Hell with...
Can you say Josh Widdicombe?
Josh Widdicombe! Hello! Josh Widdicombe.
Good. And Rob Beckett.
Rob Beckett.
Nice.
Very strong.
That was that screaming in the background. I was having flashbacks of the kids' birthday party last week. Like PTSD.
Hi, Rob and Josh. Wondering if you could give a shout out to the partners of people deployed with the UK military. My husband is currently 4 months into a 7-month deployment with the Royal Navy. I'm at home working part-time as a palliative care nurse and raising our two boys, Dylan, about to turn 3, and Reuben, 18 months.
Bit wow. Regretting the PTSD reference now. I didn't know that was happening.
Oh, dear God.
I've actually got PTSD pre as well as post.
My husband has pulled a blinder and knocked me up before he left, so I'm also 7 months pregnant. So please send me all your positive vibes to get me through and spare a thought for all those with deployed partners.
Yes.
There are so many out there. That's from Zoe.
Big up all the deployed guys and gals out there. Those are like soldier and homecoming videos on the internet. They're good. You've seen them when they come home from a tour and their kids haven't seen them for like 8 months and they hug them and play sad music. I cry to that sometimes on long journeys.
That's what my life was like after the 12 episodes of The Last Leg during the Paralympics.
Yeah, they cried because you came home, not because...
Oh my God, I've just got an email from nursery called Chicken Pox and Hand, Foot and Mouth. Shoot me in the head, Rob.
I keep getting them emails going like, oh, there's a COVID case. Please not my kid. Please not my kid. Please not my kid.
It's all clear in my room. I'm going to say it. Is there a worse phone number to come up on your phone than nursery? Genuinely, I'd prefer to see the phone number of an ex
than
the phone number of the nursery at 11 a.m.
Yes. That is the worst call you can get at 11 a.m. About 9-ish, it might be, oh, they forgot PE. Do you want to pop it in for later? Like, you haven't got the kit or you haven't got this. But at 11 a.m, I've not had that call recently, thank God.
Yeah. What a life.
What a life. We've got to be quick here. Instagram messages. One thing's annoying me. Childless people that are on holiday in September because it's cheaper, splashing it all over Instagram, can go fuck themselves. I can't deal with it. Just getting up by the pool day, out on the piss. And it's actually, I've been muting people on Instagram because they've been happy.
Yeah.
Which is not, that's obviously more my problem. They're doing nothing wrong, but I just don't want to see it happening.
Yeah. It's awful.
Imagine
it's
going awful. To Greece with Rose for a week. With no children. Not even, not no children. Like, your children don't exist, so there's no guilt.
Yeah, yeah. You're not worried about quarantine, because what's the worst that could happen? You could get 2 more weeks of holiday. Do you know what I mean? It's not like...
Anyway, fuck off. Fuck off, fuck off. Sorry, Josh, I just want a holiday
that's
so
the
bad.
The thing is, like, Max Rushton of the Guardian Football Weekly podcast, who I follow on Instagram, has just moved to Australia, and he was doing his 14
days.
Has
he? Is he still...
He's moved to Australia, yeah.
Doesn't he do TalkSport?
Yeah, he's doing it from Australia.
That's the life, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a terrible... What's his shift?
His hours are going to be bad.
What time's he on the radio in the UK?
10 a.m.
Oh, the geezer's got problems, isn't he? What time's that in Australia? Probably midnight?
Midnight, yes.
Well, who cares about Max Rushton's week?
Anyway, my point is that he is doing his 14 days in the hotel room. And I was just looking at it going, this looks fucking great. This looks absolutely what I need.
Oh, actually, it's an absolute blinder. Apparently, it's 7 p.m. at night, 10 a.m. in Australia.
Oh, no wonder he's moved to Australia. That's the only reason he's done it. Anyway, let's get on with our Instagrams.
Yes, Instagrams. Let's do this. Okay, Josh, tire pressure. We've had a lot of messages about this for you, Josh.
Oh, no.
You know you panicked and didn't know what tire pressure to do.
Yeah.
Basically, it's on the door. So if you open the driver door, there's a sticker label and it'll tell you the correct pressure.
Oh, thank you.
That's Tracy and Deborah that's messaged in with that.
I bought a tyre pressure thing now, so I can do it in the street.
Well, you can just pump it in the street.
Yeah, but as you can imagine, if you listen to Tuesday's episode, that is so far down on my to-do list. Oh, my fuel's not going to be quite efficient enough because my tyres aren't pumped up. I'll be fine for the next week.
Yeah. Okay, now, thing I have no opinion on, we asked for this the other day. I don't know what it was about. Yeah, like, I don't know, because everyone's got an opinion. I said, Steve Henry has said, Pepsi or Coke, I don't care.
Yes, that's a good one. Things I don't have an opinion on, it's really good. It's one of the great text topics.
Because when you go into places, what I think is there's a real market employer, Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah.
Whenever you go, oh, can I get a can of Coke or whatever somewhere? And they go, oh, I'm really sorry. We only do Pepsi. Is that okay? I think the messaging needs to be better. Where if you went, oh, we don't have Coke, but we've got Pepsi. You always think you're getting something worse, but actually it might be better. But yeah, if it's always delivered to you in a, is that okay? It needs to be a bit more like, no, we've got Pepsi.
This is the thing about Coke and Pepsi, is like, you may not have a favourite, but you go into a bar, you never get the option because they've just got the contract for one, haven't they?
Yeah, it's always like, it's like mafia controlled. Yeah. It's like a racketeering. You go into one area, whatever you, if you want Coke, you don't get a choice. It's one or t'other.
I feel a bit like that with most of the lagers, Rob. When you're at the bar and people go, which one do you want? And I just have to kind of, I have to pretend that I care whether it's an Amstel.
No, I care. I care.
It's just my taste buds aren't advanced enough, I don't
Well,
know.
Look, Foster's and Carlin, not
yeah,
for me.
No, right? I understand that. I'll draw the line there.
But, so I'm a, like, Moretti. Moretti's probably my favourite, or Heineken. Amstel, sometimes Stella. It's a bit lively, though. But then I can't get on board with, this is the first day of a stag do chat, I can't get on board with, like, John Smith's, like, or, like, you know, hoppy BrewDog stuff. It's too much for me. Camden's quite nice. Camden Town Lager's nice. That's a good one.
This fails on the things we don't have an opinion on. What other things do people not have opinions on?
It was literally just that.
Oh, fair enough. But send in the things you don't have an opinion on, then.
We've got another one. This is a more tired than Josh Instagram here. Hi, dear Rob and Josh, I love your podcast. Please never stop. I would like to regale you with an incident that took place many years ago when my son was around 6 months old. Normally a placid, calm baby, around this time he developed an intolerance to cow's milk. It was eventually diagnosed. We moved on to soya temporarily, all sorted. But before that, he had been crying almost nonstop for 3 days. By this point, I was basically a zombie. My partner arrived home from work one evening and took over, but I decided to pop up to the village shop to get something. It was only a 5-minute walk, but on the way there, I remember being really tempted to just lie down at the side of the road for a nap. I did do this, and I went to the shop. Coming out of the shop, in my sleep-deprived state, I did not question why on earth my partner had pulled up outside in our car, just grateful I didn't have to find the energy to trek home. I got in the car and sank into the passenger seat. It was quite a few seconds before I realised the driver wasn't my partner and the car, of course, wasn't our car. I was just sat in a stranger's car. However, it was so comfortable and I was so tired that I turned to this stranger next to me and offered him my change, £2.50, for a lift home, giving him the address. It did cross my mind as we pulled away from the shop that these could be my final moments on this.
He took her up on it.
Well, yeah. Luckily, a very nice man obliged and refused the offer of hard cash, but just dropped her home. But she could have been kidnapped and killed, but that's up to her. I must remain anonymous as my partner listens to and would not be amused even all these years later. Okay, anonymous there from...
Things you do when you're tired.
I know. I think falling asleep during a filling still wins, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think falling asleep during a filling.
Because that day you fell asleep during a C-section, but someone in your mouth. Falling asleep with someone in your mouth.
Unbelievable.
Even though it's numbed, you still know someone's in your mouth, don't you?
Yeah.
And you can feel the vibrations, right? I mean, I've never had a C-section. It's probably just as intrusive. I'd say that's on a par, C-section and dentist kind of...
You could get the dentist because obviously your teeth are one of your calling cards.
Yes. I don't like chatting at the dentist and I'm not a massive fan of the dentist. I always do go, but I sort of put it off slightly. But yeah, I'm not too bad. But my technique is headphones on while they're doing anything. And you just give them thumbs up or thumbs down if it's hurting or whatever, or to stop, especially on a clean or if they're doing a fill-in. Yeah. Right? Check up, I speak to them because they're just looking. But if I'm getting any work done, those headphones, especially ones that like the plug in and they're like a bit, what's it called? Noise cancelling. The ones that plug in a bit like ear, or, you know, that's really good because you can't hear the whirring of the machine is what gets on my nerves.
I went to a dentist and they had glasses that you put on.
Yeah.
They then show their TV glasses.
Oh. So they tell you on your glasses?
Tell you on your glasses, so you can watch Curb Your Enthusiasm. He put on Curb Your Enthusiasm and I just watched it a pair of glasses.
Yeah, I prefer a podcast or music. I like listening to really loud sort of like rap or dance music.
Does anyone listen to this while having a dental appointment? No, too dangerous if you laughed.
Yes, I mean, it's a real like slam on us if they do listen. And it was actually fine. No movement at all. Didn't laugh once. Right, another one before we bring on last Stephen one. Mangan. I know you're a busy boy today, Joshua. Here we go. Hi, Rob and Josh. Love the podcast. Has kept me sane through all of this. On the subject of swearing, blaspheming in front of kids, my three-year-old son is still in nappies at night and has got into the routine of doing a poo in them in the morning. A few weeks ago, he had a run of absolute stinkers, which apparently caused my partner to exclaim, "Jesus Christ," each time he got him up and got him dressed for the day. Also, yeah, because I've got a three-year-old's poo. It's just like an adult's poo. Yeah. It's not like it's not a baby poo anymore. That is just like near enough fully grown human shit in a little pair of pants. Anyway, my son now seems to believe that the phrase is associated with shitting. Multiple times I've overheard him on the toilet straining and exclaiming, "Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ," like a sweaty man dealing with the consequences of a lager and curry binge. We have tried to discourage him, but he keeps doing it. He started at nursery school recently, and I dread to think what his teachers think his home life is like. Thanks, Helen.
Oh, my word.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
That's quite funny when your kid is doing a poo and you go, "You're right," because, "Yeah, I'm just on toilet," and you know one's flying out. "Yeah, Daddy, what are we doing tomorrow? Mummy, what's for dinner?" Oh, God.
It's a strange array of impressions you've got, but that is one of your absolute crowd pleasers, isn't it?
The child shitting, any situation you put me in. "Daddy, what's the best in Legoland?" Right, okay, we'll do more Instagrams and emails next week. Sorry we haven't done that many this week. We could do another correspondence catch-up maybe in a couple of weeks.
We had such a bad week on Tuesday. We'd had such bad weeks that we didn't have time for Instagrams.
Right, okay, we've got Stephen Mangan now. Love, Stephen.
Absolutely brilliant interview. Loved it.
Hello, Stephen Mangan. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. I'm very good. It's a beautiful world. I'm very happy to be in it.
Oh, okay. Ooh, well,
yeah.
Wow.
That's how I'm feeling today. Yeah.
Have you done a Radio 4 interview for this book? you seem to have a bit different like headspace to us here.
Oh, really? Are you feeling a bit down about life?
Well, not a bit down, but it's not normally that, you know, sort of considered and reasonable and positive. It's normally, you know, two men having a breakdown.
Well, I mean, there's three men having a breakdown, but that's why, as you'll know, during a breakdown, your emotions veer wildly from one side to another. And at the moment, the pendulum is very much swung to hysteria and joy. At any minute, I'll be crying into my tea.
That is the thing with a breakdown. It isn't all bad.
Exactly. People, the upside of breakdowns that people don't talk about.
When you think you're Jesus for a bit. What, it's a good feeling that powerful for a bit. But obviously,
look at Kanye. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
He's a bit of all of us.
Yeah, exactly. Stephen, before we crack on, can you let us know about your child setup? What's the kid's situation in your life?
The kid's situation is I have three boys. I have Harry, who's the eldest. He's 13. And Harry is just, any day now, will become taller than me, which is a big moment. Oh. I didn't realise this was going to be a big moment when he emerged 13 years ago into the world.
Because that's just happened for Josh, actually, at 6 months.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. That's the kind of humour that we can enjoy. There we go.
It's that kind of stuff. Just pop that out quickly and then
that's
we can crack on.
That's going to contribute to the breakdown.
He's a big lad now, and there's lots of sort of coming up to me in the kitchen and just sort of checking his height against mine, and literally will be any day now. And he's also shoves me quite a lot. He's always asking for an arm wrestle, and it's a lot of play fighting, which we all know is just like, who can kill who at this point? Has he got to the point now where he can beat me up?
Well, how tall are you, Stephen?
I'm 6 foot.
So he's a big lad at 13, isn't he?
It's really annoying. I thought I'd have a few more years.
Do you reckon he could beat you up?
I mean, when he shoves me around, I obviously have to pretend that I'm not trying. But I've given it everything. I'm going to the gym. I'm going running. I'm working out to stay on top of this. Because the moment he knows he's got me physically, it's all over. That's it. Forget it.
Oh, wow.
I'll just have to do his bidding whenever he says, like, can you tidy your room, Harry? He'll be like, "Can you tidy your room?" And I'll go, "All right, sorry, yeah, I will."
And think as well, you've got to do this with two more as well as they come up the ranks of, trying to get alpha status.
I can't bear it. I mean, I never thought I'd have boys because I got two sisters and I just assumed I'd have girls for some reason, and I thought I could handle that. I know what, you know, growing up around
girls. You understand women.
I understand. Oh. I'm very, very understanding. I'm very sensitive. And I've got all these boys just kept appearing. And
how old are the other ones? Sorry.
So that's Harry. Frank is our middle one. He's 10. 11. Just turned 11 last week. He's 11. And he's... he might well be shorter than Harry. That day may never come that he overtakes. I know you think I'm obsessed by whether they're taller than me or not.
Have you got one of those doors with the heights marked on it and your height is on it?
Yeah. I have to really keep rubbing it out at night and putting it higher. Wearing little platform shoes. So Frank is 11, and then coming up age-wise at the back is little Jack, who is 5. And we're all dark haired, my wife, me, Harry and Frank, but little Jack is a very strawberry blonde. He's a little sort of redhead.
Nothing wrong with that.
He's gorgeous, but it does look like we've kidnapped him when we're all out together.
Well, yes. He's a bit younger as well because that age gap, because we've got two kids, and I don't think we want a third, because now our youngest is 3, going nearly 4, so it would be like a 5-6 year age gap if we did go for another one. So did you always want 3, or was it a bit of a, oh, let's have one more before?
I always wanted 3, and I thought we'd hung our boots up. We thought 2 was it. And Jack just sort of, I don't want to say he was a mistake. I just want to say...
It wasn't as planned for?
It was just a really, really pleasant surprise. I was filming a Victorian drama in Liverpool, and I
you went Method, no Johnny. Fair play, you're an actor.
And
the venereal disease wasn't very well received at home, but
And I remember just before a take, get a little buzz in my pocket, a message come through. I haven't turned off my phone, so I just quickly looked at it.
That's ruin a scene, doesn't it, when you get a text halfway through the Victorian.
It's in a Victorian show, isn't it?
It doesn't wash.
He's not one of those actors that stays in character. In fact, he still has his phone in his pocket while filming a Victorian scene.
Yeah, of course. But I do remember getting a text from my wife, just a picture of a positive pregnancy test with WTF on it. And,
boy.
And they said, can we go for a take? And I said, can you just give me 1 second? And I went round the corner and I sort of, there I was in big mutton chops and a top hat, just going, what are we going to do? And if I look back on that scene that we then shot, you can see the panic and terror in my eyes. It was there. But, he's the best thing that ever happened.
Do you know what? It was the best, it's the best performance Mangan's ever given in that scene. I don't know what was happening.
What one? The one where he was being tortured as a Victorian. The pain in his eyes felt so real.
Oh, God. So,
he even screamed and cried back in his trailer. He really took the scene home with him.
Did you know the pregnancy test was happening, or was it a complete...
No, I didn't. I think... no, I had no idea. I mean, there was no build up. It was just, here's the news. What are we going to call him?
Wow.
We've run out of names. Yeah.
When he came out, Ginger, was you suspicious at all? Luckily, have been some foul play.
I know. I mean, it is your kind of, but luckily my mum and her dad, he's got two Ginger grandparents. So,
there's a bit of a link.
It is, but you do feel you want to get a T-shirt printed up and put it on him as we wander around the streets, and
500 years of dark-haired Mangan's chain. You do have a wonderful head of hair, Stephen.
It's a mane on.
You don't really realise how important hair is to men when you have it.
Yeah,
and I think we're all quite blessed with hair. As been that, getting 30s and older, whereas a lot of lads our age, it is literally the bane of their life trying to cover up the hair loss.
How do you maintain your hair, Stephen? Is it because it's... Are you using a product?
I keep it in a box by the side of my bed. I bathe it in milk every fortnight. I don't know. I shampoo it, Josh. I don't know. I didn't think this was what this podcast was about.
So when you say that your oldest is 13 and he's bullying you.
Yeah, well, he's not bullying me. He's just seeing if he can bully me. Yeah,
he's seeing if he can bully me.
That sounds like someone who's being bullied. He's not actually bullying me. We're actually mates, but sometimes we fall out.
I meant to fall over.
Is it quite an alpha house with 3 boys in the house?
No, I mean, it's a showbiz house. I mean, both his parents are actors. I mean, there's a lot of leotard work and vocal warm-ups going on. It's not a butch... a butch place to be at all, which is where I think he spotted a gap in the market.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I think, you know, he says we're easy targets, you know, the jazz shoes lined up by the front door and the ballet bar in the living room. I think he thinks I can have this lot.
Have you ever had a fight, Stephen?
Yeah, I have at school. You? Yeah. I used to get into it. So I was very small. I mean, unlike him, which is also annoying because I was very, very small.
Yeah.
Until I was 15 or 16. Things happened very late for me height wise. So I was small, and I know you're going to find this hard to believe, but I was quite gobby. I used to get into fights because, of course, I couldn't keep my mouth shut, and then but I couldn't back it up, you know, physically. So it was a very tiring time.
But now he's got the size and the gobbiness. He could really do some damage.
I mean, he's every dad's worst nightmare in that respect.
Does he play rugby or anything?
Get me wrong. He's just learning to play rugby. He's just gone to a new school and he's starting to play rugby, which he's never done before.
All right. That might get rid of some of his energy. Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully.
I don't think I could deal with watching my child play rugby. But I just don't like rugby, I suppose. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, no,
I'm just not going to go and watch him. I mean, that's not what you really mean, though, is it? You're more worried about them. Whereas
I wasn't worried about the 2 hours out of my weekend. It was more the physical impact.
Yeah. Oh, God, I can't watch anything. We can't throw it forwards. Boring, defensive.
Do you take your kids to Spurs, Stephen?
I do, yeah. I mean, the eldest, Harry, he's absolutely obsessed by Spurs now. And so he goes along. I've got a couple of season tickets, so we take him along. Annoyingly, my youngest is, Jack is 5, and my wife, who's a Scouser and has absolutely no interest in football, I mean, hates football, but just to annoy me, telling him he's a Liverpool fan since he was born. So now he will answer. He'll say, I'm a Liverpool fan, which I find, I mean, he just gets Liverpool kits because my wife's just determined to annoy me by turning him into a Liverpool
fan.
That's
good trolling.
That is, isn't it? I mean, she doesn't like football.
I don't think that's on, really.
It's not on.
Because also, it's too far away. If you're going to have to take him to Liverpool.
I'm not doing that.
You're not doing that.
No, not when you've literally got a season ticket to Tottenham and they're around the corner. And they're a good, as much as it pains me to say as an Arsenal fan, they're a good club and an exciting club support. It's not like you're trying to get him to support Luton.
No,
you know what I mean.
Well, I think the problem I did was when Harry was when Harry was 8 days old, I said to Louise that I said to Lou, I'm going to take him for a walk, and I bundled him into the car and I drove him to White Hart Lane, and I just because I was terrible because we live sort of nearer to Arsenal than we do to Spurs, and I was worried that he would grow up being an Arsenal fan, so I took him to Spurs, and I've loads of pictures of him outside the ground. I'm holding him up like, you know, UEFA Cup next to a picture of Steve Perryman. And so I've got lots of pictures of him in the ground. I did the same with Frank when he was 8 days old. But I didn't do it with Jack because I was busy. So maybe it was my fault for not, you know.
Yes, you didn't do it.
Laying down a marker early enough.
How was it with the new one coming along? Was it a 6 year age gap?
Five and a half.
Had you forgotten what? Because at 5 and a half, they're like little adults, aren't they? Really off to school and doing their own thing. How was it going back to the baby stage?
I mean, you'd forgotten. It's amazing how much you forget when you've been through it. And we'd actually sort of given away or got rid of all the gear. So we had to just go right back to buying all that amazing amount of kit.
Oh, God, it's so expensive.
Oh, it's. I mean, there's a few things that you buy the first time round that you realise, you know, you don't need a changing table, for example. There's all the sort of,
floor.
You just need any flat surface that's not by an open window. That's all you need.
Yeah. The floor is safer. You're right, Josh.
It is
safer. You can't fall off the floor. You can't. That is the first rule of being a baby. You can't fall off the floor.
First rule of baby club.
So
there was all that, but it was actually really lovely because you do know you've got rid of a few neuroses and sort of panicky stuff. You realise it's quite hard to break them, you know, having brought up two past the age of sort of 4 or 5, and you realise that you can be more relaxed and also you can sort of enjoy it again because you think, oh well, you know, I get to do it all again. I mean. That's the positive side. I mean, I was in a playground yesterday and I was thinking, oh God, I've spent nearly 13 years in playgrounds. I mean, that's even the most committed paedophile would struggle to match those stats. I mean, but you know, pushing someone on the swings, you think, I've done this for so many years.
I know.
We really should have thought this through.
They never get bored of
clumps
it
them together. And, no, they don't.
Back and forth. How are you not feeling sick?
Yeah.
Can we all agree the playground is shit?
It is shit.
It is shit.
Absolutely. And other, and also you've got full of other people's children who are annoying, let's be honest.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. Annoying. I mean, he was coming down the slide yesterday, Jack, and you know, these kids are coming down the slide and then they're stopping. They're 2 and 3 year olds looking delighted with themselves having gone down. I'm like, come on, up, move. The next one's wait. I mean, you know, you want to get a bit of a system going there.
Exactly.
They just don't have no idea about efficiency, about getting things moving.
Also, as well, the problem with kids is there's always new ones with parents that are really excited. That's the first time they've been down a slide. And you're like, I've seen kids go down a slide for 13 fucking years. Get out my way. He wants to go again. Stop filming his slide. It's a shit slide.
The ones that I love are the ones that are up the top of the slide releasing their little 8-month-old kid and then trying to run down in time to catch it from the other end. That is quite funny to watch. You just think, don't worry, mate, they'll be fine. They're just literally going to slide down and land at the bottom. It's all okay.
I think it's that they never get bored. So theoretically, you could be in the park for 8 hours. And so however much effort you put in, it's still going to be difficult to get them out of the park. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no progress. It's not like going to the zoo when you go, we've done it all.
Yes.
Yes.
We've seen every animal.
Yeah, we've ticked times. It all off. Let's go home. With the park, it's just infinite.
But the beauty of having two older boys is you get to go, Frank, to, you know, play with Jack on the park while I do some very important looking at my phone on this bench.
Okay.
And you sort of subcontract all of that stuff out to the other two.
Oh, nice.
And there's, in fact, there's a lot of that goes on. Harry will put Jack to bed a lot or, you know, give him a bath.
Harry's like your dad.
He's basically... Harry is... Harry, I'm still waiting for him to give my pocket money this week, actually, because I want to go to the news agents, but he's not giving me my money.
Also, they must be like, you know, like you're young, the 11-year-old on the way to and then 13-year-old into puberty and stuff. What's it like having a teenage boy going through puberty in the house?
I mean, it's there's a lot of don't
you know
ask,
they're wanking.
Don't tell. Of course they are. I mean, in fact, I'm sitting in his room at the moment and I've just slightly, I'm looking at my hands to see... I mean, it's disgusting. It is because we were boys and we know what happens.
Frenzied wankers.
It's just disgusting. And to think of your own son and, oh, God, I just don't want to know.
No, exactly.
I mean, just, I mean, I would say to him, just, you know, keep it in the privacy of your own room. But of course, he's going to do that anyway.
Yeah.
If he started doing it downstairs, that would be another issue, wouldn't it?
Leave it. I'll check sure I have some corn flakes here, Harry.
Your grandmother's here, Jared, for goodness sake.
Have you had like the talk or any of that kind of stuff?
No, are you kidding me? No. My wife and I decided.
You two haven't even had the talk. You didn't know what was going on when you was at Victorian.
How did
you
that
could
work?
Have done with the talk.
I thought we'd worked out what was causing that. Yeah, no. We decided. Well, Lou decided, and I was very much in favour of it. That she said it would be good for her to discuss that sort of stuff with him because, you know, it would be good to hear it coming from a woman.
Yeah.
And I was like, absolutely. I'm right behind you on this one.
Yeah.
So she had the chat about the...
She just in general has those sort of chats. I don't want to
get involved.
I don't want to get involved.
I'm not looking forward to those chats. My body language is awful at the moment.
Josh, Rose has to do it. You can't be in charge of that chat. You'd be so panicked. You'd be so... Your kids would be like, it's okay, Dad. I'll explain it to you.
I'd kind of... The way I'd approach it would give them a kind of... complex about the stresses of the sex and everything forever.
When you first started doing comedy, because we started out together, when Josh first started, Stephen, we'd both get stressed and nervous, but one of your tells was you'd clap your fingers onto the palm of your hand.
Still do it.
And you'd dip your fingers in water and put water behind your ears and on your temples to calm you and cool you down. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I'd splash my face. But then, and then you get on
I'm just
TV.
That in front of this teenage girl going, look, the birds and the bees, and you're clapping your hands and throwing water in your face.
The problem is you get on TV about what you wear makeup and suddenly you can't splash your face before you go on to 8 out of 10 cats.
No, you can't. And we've done a corporate or two together, Josh, haven't we? I mean, I do remember you being quite sort of a little bit on edge before you went on. little bit of pacing going on.
You're not
you were talking to me, but you weren't really listening to me.
No.
Like now. Probably because I'm quite boring.
I think that's just stand-up comedians in general. It's very hard for them to listen. They're just so self-obsessed. But how do you split up the sort of parenting and stuff? Because you're both actors, aren't you? You and your wife.
Yeah.
So is it, what's the split? Is it sort of 50-50 or whoever's working more? How does it
depends. It depends really, because I do quite a lot of theatre, you know, every now and again. So that means you're out of the house 6 nights a week. Mm. And I used to get up in the morning after a show, but at the moment, I hope she's not listening. I'm managing to get a lie in because I'm too tired. That's what, you know, so I there are periods when I'm away filming,
yeah,
or she's away filming. I mean, Lou is kind of in charge of what goes on and knows what goes on, but I'm pretty hands on. I'm, you know, yeah. and I, for example, I'll be taking them to school for the next few months. I'm not so great at the cooking. But I do bedtimes like a lot of dads probably. I do,
reading the stories.
Although I've had some harsh reviews recently, so I'm feeling my confidence is slightly shaken.
Stories?
Yeah. Well, because, you know, I'm an actor and you think, you know, the one thing they're going to remember about their childhood is their dad reading stories in an incredible way.
I've got the audio book of you doing Funny Bones and I thought you did an excellent job.
Well, thank you very much. But Jack said to me the other day, Jack said, fewer voices, Dad, just calm it down. Just read it.
Oh, really?
Oh, you're doing all the voices.
Because I was doing all sorts of voices. And he said, just read it, Dad. Just read it.
Oh.
So that was upsetting. Although, and Harry, when I was younger, because I think probably the finest work I've ever done in my whole career was recording Rumpelstiltskin for CD. And it's honestly my high watermark of a very average career, but it's my high watermark. And when... I'm afraid to say, when Harry was younger, I would occasionally put him to bed and I'd slip the CD into a player and press play and then slowly back out of the room as he listened to me reading it on a tape.
That's perk.
Yeah. Until he was four, he thought every story ended with "read by Stephen Mangan."
You should start doing that whenever you read anything out loud. Like if you're reading out like the wine list at dinner, yes. Just read by Stephen Mangan.
So, so I do that. And, because they're boys, I tend to be the one, you know, to take them to the park, play football with them, you know, playgrounds. We're pretty 50-50. I think I'm all right. I do my bit.
With the recording of the children's audiobooks, because me and Rob have just, we've been talking recently on the show about the stresses of recording our audiobooks. But you're knocking out Funny Bones, right?
Yeah, but Stephen's a proper trained actor. I know, exactly. Harder. I'm just a
fucking market trader
that got a bit
right?
chippy.
I don't think you ever got a bit chippy. I think you were born chippy.
I just was chippy somewhere else, but
how long are you taking to knock out Funny Bones?
I read it twice, I think, and that was it. Yeah, I read it twice and I went home. Yeah, no, I stopped doing proper, you know, full length audiobooks. Although having said that, I've just done a couple of Douglas Adams books, but the full length novels are tough going. But children's books, I love, absolutely love them, and I did the audiobook for my
Let's discuss that. Your book, Escape the Room, Stephen.
What a segue. Did you hear that, the way I brought that into the conversation?
So good.
It was masterful, yeah?
It was very good, but also I found it a little disrespectful that you couldn't see where I was going.
I was
two seconds from doing the very same thing and then you showed me up.
Just like three-dimensional chess and I'm going, talk about my book.
Escape the Rooms, which is illustrated by your sister.
Yeah. I mean, who'd have seen that coming? Well, not you two, because you never met her, but...
She is an illustrator, though. You've not just sort of gone cheap. She knows what she's doing.
She can draw. Yeah, she's...
Can I keep the illustration money and just get my sister to do it? Can I keep half of it myself?
Yeah, don't tell her we got paid.
Yeah.
She's been a successful illustrator for a long time and done a lot of... I mean, all... Like Leon cookbooks, if you've got one of those in your house, they'll have been done by her. And in fact, those books have a lot of pictures, of family pictures in the back, and there's a lot of me, aged 3 and 4.
Leon?
Yeah, the first sort of 4 or 5 cookbooks they did. And yeah, we just got this idea of doing a book. And, I really don't think I'd have done it without her, because as you both will know, writing a book is ridiculously difficult and it took half my adult life to do it. I mean, it's a long process.
Because I think people think kids' book, just not one of them out, bit of money. But no, you have to really put a lot of effort in for it to be decent. And it's a proper kids' book. It's a grown-up one. It's like, yeah.
Oh, it's a proper novel. Yeah, it's proper for like 8 to 12 year olds. And I mean, when I was sort of 7, 8, I was a real bookworm. I always had my head in a book. I used to love reading, and so I wanted to write a book that I would have wanted to read at that age. You know, that it was funny and that was exciting, and you didn't know where it was going to go, and it was a bit mad. And so, my sister and I ended up working together, which was a joy because you don't know how it's going to go, really. I mean, we get on very well. Working with a family member, it's obviously, you know, it's a bit of a gamble, but her illustrations make the book. They are absolutely amazing.
Yeah, because they're sort of like, I'm looking at it now, they're like, it's a compliment. They sort of look completely original, but also decent. They're not, you know, sometimes someone tries to be so like, have character in what they do and make it different. It's like, that don't look like a fucking dog, mate. I know you're trying to be mental and put your own stamp on it, but let's try and get the message across. But hey, she's done, it's amazing. You can tell what every sort of animal is and what they're all up to, but it's sort of, you can definitely, it's got her own style to it. I don't know what she's drawn a picture of gluten-free chicken nuggets, though. Is that a hangover from Leon? Did she run out of time and just copy and pasted?
But I'm in trouble with the book because when I started it, Jack was a baby and I named the main character Jack.
Oh,
just because
no.
It was a name on my mind.
Oh, but then, the kids are going to hate you. That's therapy. All the money from this book is going to go on their therapy now.
It's going to go on their favorite. Well, no, what's happened rather than that is that I've promised Frank and Harry that I will write them a book as well. So I'm now in the middle of Frank's book.
Do you know what? That is the most bougie promise I've ever heard in my life. I promise you. I'll write you a book,
darling.
Imagine when he's older. Well, my dad wrote 2 books and one of them didn't have me as the main character.
He's a bit annoyed because the working title of the next book is The Fart That Changed the World. So he's like, Dad, I maybe don't write me a book.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Frank's the hero of the next one, and I'm halfway through that at the moment. I'm loving it.
And have your kids read it?
Yeah, they have. Frank's read it 4 times. He's read because it's perfect. It's his age. Yeah, which is either that or he's trying to butter me up because he wants something. But he says he's read it 4 times.
Ah.
He absolutely loved it, and he, you know, quotes bits from it. And yeah, I mean, it's really daft, it's really silly. I try to make it as funny as possible. It's got a sort of serious undertow, like the two main characters are both suffering a bereavement, but I wanted to write about that
was
kind
it,
of
was
thing.
It the member of a hurling team that had died.
Escape the curse, this new book.
I might get the curse into the next book, actually. Yeah, so I wanted to write about it. It's a very heavy topic, but, you know, with as light a touch as possible, and to try and write about it and make it fun and, you know.
Well, yeah, because it's about the two characters in it. They're sort of siblings. And then obviously you've done this with your sibling and, you know, you both lost your parents and stuff. So have you channeled that through this and how you dealt with it in a sort of approachable way for kids to read?
Yeah, I mean, I did an interview with Mariella Frostrup, who said, oh, well, of course, your first book, I can't do her voice, her first book is always autobiographical. I was like, what? I mean, this book's about talking animals and, you know, lots of people falling off cliffs and stuff. It's really mad. But yeah, I suppose it's just obviously in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
And for me, all the best stuff, you know, I like comedy, obviously. I like things that are funny and I like things to have a bit of depth, you know, because I think you can soften up an audience with laughter and then hopefully sort of, you know, hit them with something more moving. And so anyway, that was the plan, to try and write something that it was an ambitious, you know, thing to try and do for a first book. So but obviously death and all that stuff has been part of my life. My parents did die young, and so it's obviously part of my psyche, and it just sort of came out.
Do you have, like, when you're writing for a certain age group, is there like lots of rules in the publisher, like you can't say that, or like are you just kind of left your own devices on that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I got told that I should take out a few bits because they were just too upsetting or violent or
too raunchy.
I mean, because when you write, you can only write when you write.
Too raunchy. Jack and Callie, two siblings dealing with grief, so I'm getting off of each other. It's got a bit weird here, Steve. People deal with grief in different ways.
Yeah. You wait till the third book. No, it's, you know, you can only write to make yourself laugh or to interest you. So you can't sit down and pretend you're a 10-year-old and trying to make, you just write stuff that entertains yourself. And then the publisher will put a gentle hand on your shoulder and go, that's way too weird for a 10-year-old. That might be upsetting. That might give them nightmares. And they'll, you know, thank goodness for editors, because they come along and they just put that experienced eye over it.
Was you always quite like an academic kid then, growing up, Stephen, would you say? Like, you end up going to Cambridge and stuff like that, which is very impressive. So was you always like really into academia? And do, are your kids following that suit, or are they a little bit like sort of, oh God, Dad did that, I've got to live up to that kind of thing?
I wasn't until I was about 11 or 12, and then I sort of got more into other things, and the sort of work side of it went, and then I just put a really hard, you know, burst in at A-levels for the last minute, and it worked. So
you dipped the line.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all pretty, you know, I mean, what you want them is to be interested about the world. You know, you want them to have curiosity about everything, and you don't want the kid who is you know, a brilliant academic achiever and has no mates or any interest outside of his work, you know. So you try and encourage them to get into music and into all the arts and sport and everything, because you know, they're I think kids, especially nowadays, they have to take their school life so much more seriously than when I was a kid. There seems to be so much pressure on children to do well, and I don't think the lockdown helped at all. My parents were much more into me working hard at school, because they were immigrants and they both had to leave school at 14, and they didn't really have much of an education. They were smart, but they'd had no education at all. My dad came over and was a labourer, and my mum was a barmaid. And so for them, like, getting an education was a really big deal. But I sort of a bit more relaxed about it, I think.
So did you go to an independent school? And so did you get a scholarship then?
My sisters went to the local state school, and I went to I got a scholarship to a private school.
Oh, well done, mate!
And then I ended up going to a boarding school, which my parents didn't want me to do at all, and were very against it. But I thought it would be like, you know, going to an Enid Blyton story or something. It'd be all
was it?
No. I mean, it was horrible. It was horrible.
What age?
Oh, I was 13, so I wasn't that young.
Yeah, God.
Bloody hell, there must have been some wanking going on there, mate. Oh.
Well, I mean, there were 50 kids in one room. There was like stalls. It was like a stable. So you had a little stall, and there was 25 beds down each side of the room. So there was 50 boys
in
one massive room. I mean, it was, if you could, have powered the local town off the kinetic energy.
Yeah. God, that poor sewage pipe.
And it, you know, so that, I just, oh, God.
What was it like being away at boarding school?
It was miserable. For the first 2 years, I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And because it was my idea, because I thought this would have sounded like a laugh. I don't know why I thought it sounded like a laugh. I couldn't tell my parents. I didn't tell my parents that I was upset and unhappy. So I sort of dealt with it all. And then the last few years, because then we had, it was all boy and then girls in the sixth form. So that transformed it, and by then I got used to it. And then when you're 16, 17, it's a bit of a different story. But those early years, miserable.
Oh, wow. And so you wouldn't want your kids going to boarding school then?
Well, no, I said that, but if Harry gets any more gobby, then Lou and I do threaten all of them with boarding. That's our go-to threat if any of them are misbehaving, and it does shut them up.
Really? That Dara O'Brien's threat is that he'll go on Strictly.
Do you think that was Bill Bailey's threat and he had to go through with it?
Yeah, he absolutely nailed it. I don't know what's worse, your dad being really bad at it or absolutely nailing it and just walking around like the king of Strictly. I think
with a shaved chest and a fake tan. Yeah. Tight trousers.
Just loving it. And then every wedding you go to, they're like, oh, get on the dance floor. You're like, I might as well. And they're all being sick in the bush.
Yeah.
Couldn't abide it. And like, you've got a spread of ages of kids. Do they get on well together then?
I mean, they do. I mean, you'll know that there is nothing quite as joyful in the world as one of your children making the other kid really laugh. I mean, it's a lovely, but it's as beautiful as them fighting and arguing is awful, because, you know, when they go at each other, oh God, it just dements you, doesn't it? So they are, I mean, they both love Jack because he's the little one. He's like a little, I mean, we all just pour love and affect him. He's never left alone. He's cuddled, he's kissed, they love playing with him, they tickle him, it's a joy. The two older ones can get on very well, and they can also rub each other out the wrong way, you know, but that's brothers, isn't it?
They fight all the time. I've got four brothers, it's carnage,
right? Exactly. So they get on pretty well. I mean, this quite, like you say, it's quite a spread. I think if you're born 1 year after another, it's probably a different deal. But they're so, what they're going through at any one time is so different from each other. Mm. I mean, the annoying thing is I'm the eldest in my family. The annoying thing is the oldest one is always like, every time the middle child, the youngest one, does something and is excited about it, the older one, they're going, yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
I've already done that. Oh, yeah. And we'll tell them what's going to happen. And it's that I find really irritating. I'm always trying to let them. I'm trying to find, like Harry is a good guitar. He plays the guitar. He's really into the guitar. So I bought Frank a little drum kit because I thought he's got to do something different that is his thing. I'm constantly trying to find things that he can own and, you know, that Harry hasn't already been there and done it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's what, do you find it it's hard trying to be like sort of laddie because you grew up with sisters. Eventually, yeah. When they grow up as well and they're all teenagers, there's four blokes knocking about together that you're a part of. You know what I mean? So it's like it's been blokes, on a stag do, a little mini stag do all the time.
And my wife, I mean, Lou had three brothers and now she's got three sons. So she knows, she's like, this is exactly like it was when I was growing up. You know, everyone's scrapping and fighting and throwing each other around the place. But then my cousin John lived around the corner. And his dad, my uncle Paddy, he would pick us up and throw us against the wall on a regular basis. So I wasn't totally without masculine.
Yeah.
You know,
that really male influence.
It was like a silverback. I mean, he'd sort of pick me up and hurl me and we'd love it. I don't know what we thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, my mate's dad used to, we'd go around there for like sleepovers and for a lot, he'd hang you over the banisters and like punch you on the back. And it was a laugh. It'd like hang you by your legs.
Hang you by your legs?
Yeah.
Like he was dangling you out of a window?
Yeah.
Like Michael Jackson with that.
Yeah. A blanket. He made me blanket.
Wow.
I know.
Blanket.
Looking back, that's mental actually. But yeah.
They are so different, aren't they? Some are very sensitive and some are tougher. And you know, so my boys, they're great. I love them.
Oh, blessed.
Do you know what? That's the absolute perfect way to end, isn't it, with some positivity.
Well, no, the question I always ask is there one thing that your wife or partner does that annoys you parenting wise that you sort of
parenting
mentioned?
Wise
yeah not I, actually I, as a person I was but parenting
drawing up a long yeah, but,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah. She got off with that bloke 6 months before we got together. Yeah. That always would come
before
okay, so. No, but parenting wise, you may have like bumped heads over it in the past, or you haven't brought it up because it's just not worth the row. But a way they do it compared to you, and it's more of just an approach thing that's different.
Well, she's annoyingly good at being a parent, but she does all her.
Can I say, Stephen, that it's the quickest anyone's ever had something.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't even finish the question, and you were on it. Most people even pretend to think.
No, I'm going straight in there.
Fair enough.
Her family all have this sort of. They run out of energy. They're like computers that are just suddenly run out of power. They need to be fed on a regular basis, or they kind of, you have some sort of sugar crash, but they all, I mean, her elder brother, Martin, will just sort of stare blankly at a wall. You'll have to kind of go and shove a Twinkie into his mouth. Do you have Twinkies over here? Anyway.
Yeah, in South London, not yet.
They cross the river.
They're held up in Blackwall Tunnel. Brexit, HGV shortage.
So the kids, like 20 minutes before dinner, they'll go, I'm really hungry. And I'll be like, yeah, that's because we're 20 minutes away from dinner. You're supposed to be hungry. This is great. But Lou will always give them a snack 20 minutes. So she'll give them, and that drives me absolutely nuts, because then 20 minutes later, they're like, you won't eat your dinner. Oh, will it? I'll still be hungry. And then 20 minutes later, they don't eat their dinner. Now I'm saying it out loud. It doesn't sound
that
loud.
I can get that.
That would annoy me.
But I'm worse at spotting. I mean, she's much better at planning ahead. I will start getting the dinner ready when they start complaining they're hungry.
Okay.
She will end. Yeah. So then it takes an hour. There's an hour of pain while they're screaming and punching each other because they're so wound up and hungry. Whereas she will think of that ahead of time. So I can't really complain about that.
What time are you having dinner with that range of ages?
Six. We have dinner at six. Yeah. It's just the.
And are you eating at six as well?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I am.
It's like being back in boarding school.
I know.
But they're not hungry as soon as they come out of school.
Well, they get a snack when they come out of school, yeah. They get a
snack and then they wait till dinner later.
Yeah, I mean, but they do. I mean, you do find you need lorry loads of food. I mean, it's like a plague of locusts every day moving through the house. It's incredible.
Cheers, Stephen. Thank you so
much.
It's
been absolutely brilliant to talk to you, Stephen.
My pleasure.
And we'll make sure we read Escape the Rooms.
Yes. Lovely.
Escape the Room, Stephen Mangan, illustrated by Anita Mangan. Out 10th of June 2021. It's already out.
It's already out.
Just go, you can literally go to the shop now and get it.
It's a bestseller.
Oh, it's a bestseller.
Oh yeah. Not an adult gambling like your book, Josh.
Oh no, I know. Tell me about it.
Why is it adult gambling?
Well, it's the people buying it, you know, it's a risk involved, isn't there? I like him out loud. Do I like him off the page? Let's find out.
By the way, I should say that I've been filming The Split recently, and we were filming, I won't say the location because it's for obvious reasons, but and then a rumour went round like wildfire one day on set. We were out on location that Josh Widdicombe had just been seen leaving the nursery next to where we were filming with a child. Yeah, sorry, that makes it sound like
his child.
Stolen a child. Your child, I presume.
Oh, you're still nonsense, Josh. You said you'd knock that on the head.
But yeah, I did walk past them filming and I was like, I mean, where were you at that point?
I was inside crying with Nicola Walker.
Are you inside?
Got another text of his wife, WTF, baby scan.
Well, if you're back on that location, do nip into the nursery, Stephen. And okay, you know,
I'm not sure they'll let me, Josh. It's very lack security. If yeah. I could just pop in.
Hi, Stephen Mangan here. My friend's kid goes in. Just thought I'd pop in. cheers, Stephen. And good luck with the book. Well, cheers, you don't need good luck. It's already a bestseller. Escape the Rooms out now. Get it, people.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Stephen Mangan, I love Stephen Mangan. Yeah, I've never really spoke to him properly because I've only met him on TV shows like here and there, but he's a really nice bloke, isn't he?
Lovely bloke. Really nice.
To think of like that thing of like having three boys and the thought of that third one just popping out at the end.
Oh, mate. It could be. Could be.
Could be us soon. I'll tell you what, though. Soon. You know, it might be some pain, but it's the podcast game.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my new catchphrase when I'm out and about and having a terrible time with my family.
I'd say that is the single best thing about this podcast is monetizing my sadness. Every time something's going really badly, I think, well, there's a positive in this.
So if anyone ever sees you, like, in a posh restaurant or driving a fancy car, you go, look what he's got, but look how sad his eyes are.
Anyway, we'll be back to monetize more sadness on Tuesday.
Well, no, it's not just to monetize, is it?
No,
it's good
not.
To get it off
it
your chest,
joke.
Josh.
It was a joke.
It was just a little joke.
It was a little joke. Yeah, yeah, it's good to get it off
your chest.
It's
a bit echoey.
Chest.
Is that your villa in Portugal? You're in. For the record, you haven't got a villa in Portugal, have you?
No.
It's technically Spain. It's right on the border.
Exactly.
No, it's just a bit
it
of
depends
fun.
Which room you're in.
It spans the coast.
It really does, yeah. One kitchen in Portugal, one in Spain. Don't need two kitchens, but why not?
Why not? Eh? I'll do Spanish food in one, Portuguese in the other.
Do you want tapas or do you want Nando's?
There is a little TV showbiz world in Portugal, though, isn't there? Do you know about this?
Is that?
Well, Ann and Deck have got like villas in Portugal, and so have Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield. There's a little like
wow
ITV Portugal crew. Bradley Walsh is over there.
Oh, my word.
It's like a little gang of them. I saw Jason Manford went there on holiday and he was with Dion Dublin, but I think they were renting.
Dion Dublin. Dion Dublin's BBC, mate.
You should get Dion on. Dion Dublin.
I'd love to get Dion on. Has he got kids?
Yeah, yeah. It's a problem with his kids, though. They keep Dublin and Dublin and Dublin. Oh, it doesn't work.
Lovely.
Who cares?
Who cares? Who's still listening at this point?
If you're
Be
still-
honest. Are you still listening? Do write in.
No one's still listening. If you're still listening to this, just message us, Dion Dublin, 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 and we'll find out if people listen. Right, see you next week.
Bye.
Hello, I'm Tom Crane.
And I'm Simran Shah, and we're the hosts of the new food and comedy podcast, My Favourite Takeaway, where each week we're invited into the home of a celebrity guest to share their favourite takeaway, exactly as they'd normally have it.
We'll be trying it all, from Peruvian street food slouched on James Acaster's L-shaped sofa,
to an Antiguan feast huddled around Andy Oliver's dinner table,
via an alfresco Indian takeaway sat in Tom Allen's garden. And we also want to hear from you, the listener.
Your takeaway disasters.
Your weird habits.
And your personal takeaway recommendations. You can follow us on Insta, My Favourite Takeaway Podcast,
on Twitter at Fave Takeaway Pod,
or you can email us hello@myfavouritetakeawaypodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe, like and share.
My Favourite Takeaway, the podcast for anyone who loves food but can't always be bothered to cook it.
Available on all podcast platforms now.